Bob, come and introduce Guy to us.
Thank you.
Guy, my friend, I was just asking him the other day, it's 22 years since we first met, and they were going to go to Costa Rica, I think, and I had gone, and I went over just to share with them at the church in Arnprior. And after that, Guy has just caught fire. He's anywhere there's a need, he seems to be working. He got toys together, I know, for in town here, and he went down to New Orleans several times for the hurricane cleanup with groups. And he's been going to Guatemala for how many, 10 years, 12, 15 years now, with groups, at least one or two a year, and doing work with the widows and orphans down there. Guy has been a very faithful servant to the Lord, and I really love him. And I just ask that you would listen and see what he has to say to you, see where it touches your heart. Come on up, Guy.
Wow, it's such a privilege to be here. And I want to say something to Pastor Chuck. He's listening, yes. This church has been so supportive of everything I seem to have put my hands on in the last, at least 22 years. When we put a team together to go to Costa Rica, team of youth, I don't think anybody here was on that team, I don't think, 22 years ago. Joel, but he was, did you go to Costa Rica? No. Not with the team. Craig did. Craig and Amber. Yeah, I know. It's so nice to see Joel leading worship. You know, my late wife used to babysit that family. Many years ago when they were living in Arnprior. Anyways, just goes to show you how long I've been around. But anyways, Pastor Chuck, I just want to thank you specifically and Val. For all of your support that you've given to me and my organization over the years. As we go through the slide presentation, mainly on Guatemala, you'll see some of the projects that you've all been a part of. Even if you haven't been able to go on a mission trip, the fact that you're praying for us and supporting us financially means the world to me. So thank you. Pastor Chuck. Well, I'm going to take my glasses off because I can't read my notes with them on. But I am the founder and president of Love Made Real Ministries. And basically, that is a missions organization. When I was first saved 35 years ago, this wasn't in my wildest dreams, right? To be a founder and the president of a missions organization. But I was kind of forced on me in a way. I don't begrudge that at all. But what was happening, I was so involved in missions at my local church in Arnprior, and I was generating so much income for missions that the Canada Revenue Agency sent a notice to our church saying, are you a missions organization or are you a church? Make up your mind. And so at that point, the leadership at my church asked me if I could start my own organization. They're a good problem to have, right? So that's how Love Made Real came to be. I didn't set out for that to happen, right? So I've been asked this morning to share a little bit about Love Made Real and my testimony about how I got involved in missions. That predates Guatemala. So I'm going to start sharing a little bit about that, and then we'll get into Guatemala. But I also want to provide encouragement, right, to anybody who's thinking about serving. For me, I kind of wear two hats. One is the founder and leader of Love Made Real Ministries, but I'm also the missions leader and community outreach coordinator at my local church in Arnprior. And as Bob mentioned, we just went through a couple of weeks before Christmas where we received 925 toys from Giant Tiger and the Heart Store. And so we had to sort all those toys. We had to match them with the referrals we got from local agencies. We had to distribute them. So I just came back from Guatemala on December the 12th. And on December the 13th, I was at the church because I was heading up that whole toy campaign. So we were able to bless 85 families in Arnprior, gave each of the kids like six or seven toys because we had so many toys. It just was overwhelming. And we still have about 300 toys left at the church. So anyways, so it feels like I landed from Guatemala, went running with the toy campaign for 10 days, and then Christmas arrived, and then I went on to visit my family afterwards, and I just got back on Friday, so I've kind of been on a road, haven't been spent much time at my home in Arnprior, but it feels good to come here. It feels like I'm grounded here. It feels like I'm part of this church because there's been so much connection with this church and what I've done in my personal life and in missions. And there's sort of a really rich history of collaboration, as you'll see in a slide presentation. Personally, in order to talk about how I got involved in mission, I need to share a little bit about my personal history. I was saved about 35 years ago, and God delivered me from a life of alcohol and drugs. And praise God. I was fortunate when I was first saved to go to a church led by Pastors Dan and Sue Chick. And they really mentored me in my early years. And I'm so grateful. I still consider Pastor Dan and Sue my spiritual parents. For some of you who know them, they really have a missions bent to them. And they spent time as a full-time missionaries in Uganda. So that's where my heart for missions really started, was through the influence from Pastors Dan and Sue. And basically, I just said, yes, Lord, you want to use me? Use me. So I just began to serve. It was not more complicated than that, right? We tend to try to complicate things, and we put people on pedestals, and we compare ourselves to them. Oh, we could never do that. We could never do that. Well, all you need to do is put one step ahead of the other, right? And just serve. And I didn't go to a seminary to learn how to do missions. I just did it, right? I just did it. I had an opportunity to leave the federal government at an early age. I spent 25 years in the federal government as a policy writer and a manager for Agriculture Canada. But then an opportunity came for me to either be transferred or just leave. I just chose to leave because I knew there was something in my heart that I wanted to do for the Lord. And so for the last 20 years, that's what I've been doing, you know, and God provides. Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides, right? For the last 20 years, I haven't earned a cent, one penny from anything that I've done, and I refuse to. God provides everything that I need, my pension, everything. So what an awesome opportunity to be able to be in that position and be able to serve the Lord, right? And not have to worry about finances, right? So that's kind of like my story. You know, I can't say that there haven't been bumps along the road, you know, very early on. I don't know if anybody's been through a church split before, but, you know, 5 or 6 years after I was saved, there was a church split, and it was devastating, absolutely devastating to me. And I couldn't understand the reason behind it. There's two sides, of course. And anyways, and then my wife passes away, right? While we're living in Guatemala back in 2013, of course, I spent asking the Lord, you know, why, right? Well, we went to Guatemala to establish this mission work together. As a kid, my late wife wanted to be a missionary, and we were married, and I was able to provide that opportunity for her. She was in her element. And then she dies in Guatemala in 2013, just a year before Teresa passed away. But, you know, I persevered. A year later, the main guy that we were working with in Guatemala had a very serious motorcycle accident and nearly died. So anyways, and then, of course, there's COVID has come along and wasn't able to travel to Guatemala for 2 years until a year ago when I went. And still now, right? You can't fly through the United States now. They still require vaccinations to fly through the United States. And there's a lot of fear. People don't think they're not going to be able to get back to Canada if they go to Guatemala because of COVID. But anyways, that's a little bit of my story. I just hope that no matter where you are, God can use you, you know, and you just have to say yes, right? So dreams, I want to talk a little bit about dreams and purposes, because when I was first saved, I had no idea where God was taking me. Absolutely none. All I wanted to do was clean the church, you know, and I did that, right? I did that. I cleaned the washrooms. I did all that, right? Became a deacon. I did that. And so one thing kind of led to the other. When we think we have an understanding of our purpose, it's really only a small portion of God's purpose for you. Because for me, there seems to be an increase. It just seems to have increased and increased over the years. First, I just wanted to take short-term missions teams different places because I just wanted to serve the poor. I wanted to make a difference. that's how it started. And look where I am now, right? So there's been an increase. And what we think is God's purpose for our life, that's our understanding. That's not really God's understanding, right? So his dreams and his purposes for us are usually much, much larger than what we think. I know my first foray in missions was actually working with Craig and Amber Hall on a short-term mission trip to go to Costa Rica. That was 22 years ago. I don't know where the time has gone. I helped them coordinate that, and I organized, I don't know if anybody remembers, Joel might remember, the Root Food Cafe. Anyways, it was at the mall. It was at the mall in Arm Prior. The media was there. All the teens that were on the trip got together and set up tables, and we cooked really gross stuff for them. And like bull's testicles and second spleen of a cow and, I don't know, all kinds of mushroom caps with pickle eggs, fresh pickle eggs, like the fish. It was just really gross. Anyways, so we had that, and that was a fundraiser. We raised like $7,500 in that fundraiser for all the youth to be able to go to Costa Rica. So that was really fun. That was my first taste of missions, and no pun inquired. But anyways, it was fun. That was really, I didn't go on a trip. My son went on that trip. And then I went on a short-term mission trip to Jamaica, organized by a pastor from Buffalo, Jerry and Maureen Habistro. So we replaced all the windows in the boys' Christian orphanage. So we did that on that particular trip. And then just a year or two later, Hurricane Katrina hit. So I took three teams of 15 people each time. And we drove straight to New Orleans without any stop. So it was a 30-hour drive. So we had three drivers per van, three minivans on each trip. And you'll see some pictures here. There's some of the people who used to go to West Ottawa here were on those teams. So all I want to say is that as we mature and are obedient to God, I believe that he increases his purposes for our lives. And I just, you know, my dreams didn't come close to comparing with what I am now and what God is doing in my life right now. And I know that in terms of Guatemala, and there's a strong, strong influence in this church for what goes on in Guatemala. And it, you know, it started with Pastor Chuck and Val, who went to Guatemala, you know, 40 years ago. And then Bob, of course, with Teresa adopting three girls. So there's a really, really long history, rich tradition here with Guatemala. My first trip to Guatemala was in 2008, 15 years ago this month. I took my first team to Guatemala. And since then, we have hosted 65 teams, 65 teams of volunteers from the United States as well as Canada. So probably 2/3 Canada, 1/3 United States. And it's been phenomenal. It's been a journey that I would have never been able to dream up or do on my own, right? We'll talk more about Guatemala in the slide presentation. If you're serious about serving Jesus, all I have to say is be prepared for increase, because God will increase whatever his will is for you, and you don't have to work at it. He's just going to do it, and that's been my pattern. All that is required on our part is just to say yes. You know, as Christians, I think we all have desires in our heart. God puts a desire on our heart. Those desires come from God. Those are God-given desires that he gives to us. And I believe that we need to, once that desire is there, then it's our responsibility to do something with it. You know, some of the common reasons I hear for people not going on mission trips, preface that by saying that I don't believe that in my heart, I don't believe that overseas missions is any more important than community outreach. Both to me are the same, and I put the same importance on both of them. So maybe you're not called to the mission field overseas. Maybe you're called into the community, but as long as you go outside the four walls of your church and you're serving, that's the important thing. You know, we've been given so much from Jesus, right, in our lives. It's really important that we give that away. And you can't do that if you stay within the four walls of your church. The common reasons I hear about people not wanting to go to Guatemala or not wanting to go on overseas missions is they can't afford it. Well, I have had people who've been on social assistance who felt a call to go to Guatemala. God provided, right? They couldn't save a dime themselves, but they got sponsored by people. They had fundraisers. So if God has put it on your heart to go on a missions trip and it's an issue of finances, just give that to the Lord and he will provide. Not once in 15 years has someone not been able to go because of finances. This is not a lie. It's true. I've not come across that. So if God has put it on your heart to go on a mission trip, whether it's Guatemala, whether it's any other country in the world, God will provide. He's Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides. And the other common thing I hear is you don't have anything to offer, right? I'm not a plumber. I'm not an electrician. I'm not a carpenter or whatever, right? What I have to say to you is all that is required is a willing heart. You know, we're only being asked to be the hands and feet of Jesus. We have hands, we have feet, and a willing heart. That's all you need to go on the mission trip. Or the other thing is I'm too old, right? I had one lady, and some of you may know her, Marjorie Seward, whose husband just passed away a month ago or so. But she came to Guatemala, and she was 71 years old. Look at Bob. I'm not going to say how old he is. I don't even know how old he is, but I think it's more than 71, 73. And he's going at the end of the month. So age, you know, and, you know, I get it, right? Like I turned 65 last November, you know, Jim knows this. I spent a couple of months thinking, oh, is my time up? Is it time to hand this over to someone else? And I struggled with that in my mind, right? We let these minds go through. And I brought it up to the board of directors, and Jim is on our board, so he can attest to this. And I said, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I'm going to be 65 in November. And is it time to pass the baton here? I'm not sure. Of course, I was set straight, and my board would have nothing of that, and likely so. And that's right. But we entertain these thoughts, right? Sometimes, okay, we're too old as an excuse. And I just went through that, right? And I know my time is not up. Of course, there's fear. That's the other common reason that I most often hear about people not going on mission trips or even serving in the community, right? The fear of travel. You know, last November, I've got two teams going to Guatemala in February, and they were full, absolutely full. I had no more room for anybody else. And as soon as we found out that the U.S. was not lifting their vaccine requirements for travel, I lost eight people. Just like that. And it's because they didn't want to fly over the United States. And they were scared that we were going to run out of diesel. The U.S. is going to run out of diesel. Planes are going to be canceled because there's no fuel. And the federal government in Canada is going to close the border. And they're not going to be able to get back, right? You know, I don't live in fear. But, you know, some people are gripped with that. I lost eight people. I had to restock those teams, right? So anyways, you know, I've experienced all of these things. I'm not being judgmental here. I'm just saying these are some of the excuses. But what is God calling you to do for his kingdom, right? What is the call of God on your life? What is God's purposes for your life? So I want to go through a slide presentation right now, mostly about Guatemala. It's like a little journey. And I really spent a lot of time trying to find pictures. And you'll recognize a lot of these pictures and the people in these pictures because I selected pictures of our collaboration as a church here with our church and my organization and for me personally. And so Well, the first slide is my wife. After my late wife passed away in 2013, I remarried in, 2016. So that's Beth, and she was unable to join us this morning because she's on a worship team at our church, but she'll be with me when I speak in Petawawa at a church later on this month. That's Beth and I in Guatemala. So our first trip was in Jamaica, as I mentioned, then New Orleans, 2016. That's my very first trip in Jamaica at a Christian boys orphanage. How can you not get addicted to this, right? And you go on a mission trip, everybody just loves on you because they appreciate someone from a foreign country taking the time to come and bless them. So that was my very first taste. And that's what really got me addicted to missions. And that was our team. I don't think there's anybody here. That's Pastor Haberstroh in the green in the back. We took three trips to New Orleans. And that was one of the projects we renovated. And this was in the lower Ninth Ward where there was flooding 9 feet. And we renovated this house. We renovated it, a girls' Catholic school, and here we are polishing, taking the dust off the ceramic tile outside the school. And of course, we were with an organization called Operation Blessing, which is the practical arm of the 700 Club. And Pat Robertson is the founder of the 700 Club. So it was a Christian organization, and they were just filming. He showed up that last day. And of course, when you're on a mission field, there's a possibility that you could get dirty. Not all the time, but we certainly did in New Orleans. So love made real, serving God, serving nations. And our signature scripture is, let's not merely say that we love each other, let us show the truth by our actions. For me, that's been a driving force for me to improve the quality of life for the poor in developing countries by working on humanitarian projects and by ministering to the spiritual needs of those we serve. That's our driver, Walter and his mother, Olga. But Walter has been my driver for 15 years, and he's also responsible for all of Love Made Real's finances in Guatemala when I'm not in country. From houses to homes. So the first year, a couple of people there from West Ottawa, I don't know if you can see them, Rachel Garrett and Nadja Buchan are in that picture. So the first couple of years, 2008, 2009, 19 cinder block homes just outside of Antigua. I think that was the very first team. And that was another team. There's Nadja towards the left and Rachel in the second row, to the right, Rachel Garrett. She's not Garrett anymore. Anyway, so these are the houses we built. Yeah, so and they really like their houses in cool colors, flashy colors. Everything in Guatemala is colorful. There's Rachel and Nadja. And that was a typical form of transportation to the work site, is sitting on the back of pickup truck. There's Nadja building center block house. Oh, this is a picture Carlos and Laura. So Laura is Paulina's twin sister, and Carlos is their older brother. Anyways, I think I was delivering something on behalf of Bob and Teresa to them. Just took this picture. And here we go. We're putting in the cement floor because a lot of the houses that people live in have dirt floors. So in rainy season, they get flooded and parasites and mud and stuff. So here we are putting in the cement floor. There's Virgilia, which is Laura's sister. So this church asked Love Made Real to build a home and a bathroom for Virgilia in Guatemala City. So we just happened to have the time, and I believe this church gave $2,500 or something to Love Made Real in order for us to build Virgilia, a home and a washroom. And that's the completed work there. And that's in Guatemala City. So then we started the work with Senderos de Luz, Hilmar and Carmen. And there's Hilmar and Carmen. I think they were rededicating their wedding. In that particular picture, took them to a restaurant. And I don't know if you know where La Pinata is, but in order to get to La Pinata, you got to go down this steep, steep, steep hill and go back up this little hill. And so you can imagine, we built a four-story complex made out of bricks. So it was like 4,000 bricks that we needed to bring down the hill and up the hill. And the kids are only too happy to help. Here they are in the Tonka truck, and they're pushing a cinder block up the hill. And that's what they did. And yes, there was no shortage of help. There was like the whole village was waiting for us. We delivered 25 wood stoves one time, and they were all on a hill going down the hill. And the whole village was there. These wood stoves have 11 pieces to them. And it was just phenomenal. And there's my little buddy, Brandon. In La Pinata, he's carrying a piece of rebarb up to the current feeding center in La Pinata. And of course, not too many safety concerns in Guatemala. And that's still that way to this day. So you can see the building in the background there. So that's the building we built in 2010. And we finished it in 13 months in 2011. And we also bought the piece of land next door. And that's currently being used as a preschool program in La Pinata. And then the bigger building is a feeding center in La Pinata. And there's that preschool building that we purchased. And that was the dedication of that big building that I just showed you. Hilmar and I invited a bunch of people. We dedicated the building. And this is my late wife, Shirley. This was in one of the rooms in that big feeding center with my little buddy, Brandon. Shirley passed away in July 2013. This picture was taken 2012, perhaps. or 2011. Do you remember that, Bob? Yeah, Bob was involved in this particular project. This was a homeless man who was living in these conditions on the side of a mountain. So we just happened to be delivering a wood stove somewhere in that neighborhood. We decided on the spot to build him a better shelter. So we built him that. Pastor Juan used to be the pastor at the church in La Pineda with Hilmar and his wife. Anyways, we were just delivering a water filter for them. Then we started to work in 2012 with Jorge and Maria, House of Hopes. There's Jorge and Maria. Wonderful, wonderful people. They own a restaurant in the village of Santiago and now a butcher shop in Santiago. And he's also an elder in his local church. Of course, in charge of House of Hope or Casa Esperanza in Santiago. And we work primarily with him now, with them. So that's our feeding center in Guatemala, in Santiago. We have about 40 families that are registered with the feeding center with about 80 or 90 kids. There's about 120 people who are registered. And most of them are widows and single moms and their kids. I think out of the 40 families, maybe two or three of them have husbands, but most of them are widows or single moms. So here we are praying over the offering there. Two younger ladies and Wendy, your cook. So we have propane stoves and we cook these meals twice a week. So that's our hub. We only serve meals twice a week, but there's meat in the meals, which they don't normally get at home. So they come to our feeding center and we use that opportunity to share the word of God with the kids. And I actually shared a salvation message December the 10th, just this past December. At a party, we had 95 people attend on a Saturday night. And so I shared a salvation message. Between 15 and 20 of the moms came up for prayer. It was just phenomenal. So I'm just looking forward to going back at the end of the month and following up with those families and just seeing how many first-time decisions, how many rededications or whatever. We've been kind of focusing a lot on their material needs in Guatemala in the last 15 years. And we're transitioning into trying to provide a better balance in terms of ministry and material things. We really want to see people come to know the Lord, right? That's so important, but the needs are great, right? So it's really hard to balance that. Lily and Angela, Bob knows those two girls. Not exactly sure why he was feeding him, but probably because he wasn't eating. And we do crafts with the kids on feeding days, and we have Christian coloring pages, and we share the word in different ways. Typical way of carrying a baby around in Guatemala. You remember who this is? Lady in the Black, Megan. Well, she came to Guatemala. She was learning English as a second language, I believe. Yeah. And so she came and stayed with us and came to our feeding center. There's my wife and I a couple of years ago, or 3 years ago, I guess, with some kids. They just love getting their pictures taken. A couple more. Irma and her little baby. This is an orphan, a lady who lost both her parents within 5 years of each other to alcoholism. I saw the mother die from cirrhosis of the liver, and we buried her, and her and her five siblings instantly became orphans. So we've been supporting them for the last 10 years or 12 years or so, but they're all pretty well independent now. And that's, she just married last year and had a little baby. And we always take the opportunity to pray as often as we can. Here we're praying for sickness in this couple. And here we are on one of our evenings where we honor all the moms. We are washing their feet. So Jim is in the middle there. Didn't introduce Jim to you. Jim came in place of Beth. Or I don't know, you might have come anyways, but Jim is on my board of directors. Here you are, washing the feet of the ladies and honoring them. People often ask, what's the greatest thing that we can take to Guatemala? It's always shoes. They go through shoes and they can't afford shoes. A lot of them are walking bare feet, but these, you know, this is the need. And here we are tracing the feet on a piece of paper so that we can go and find the right sizes of shoes for the kids. And that's Bev Moorhead doing the tracing there. So we're providing shoes. We bring suitcases of shoes down and within days they're all gone. And this past November, what we've been doing a lot since COVID is providing food packages. So here we put together 70 food packages for the families. And it includes rice and beans and noodles and corn flour, sugar, salt, oil, all kinds of things, laundry soap and different things. So that's enough to feed one family for about a month. and always a carton of eggs. They use a lot of eggs. And that's just some of the ladies thanking me for my support at the feeding center. And during COVID, we didn't restrict ourselves to the families at the feeding center. We went around and distributed food packages to others who were not able to even go to work and wash clothes or make tortillas or anything because there was no public transportation. So everything was shut down. So even those people who were earning $2 or $3 a day couldn't go to work. So this lady with no legs, we stopped by and provided some food for her. And in 2018, there was a massive volcano eruption at Volcano Fuego. So we went out and we distributed like 120 food packages to the families. The whole village was destroyed. Hundreds of people died. And so we went to a neighboring village for those who fled and were distributing food packages there. And this past November, we purchased the school supplies for 50 kids. The kids in Guatemala, their school year is from January to October. In December, when we were there, we bought school supplies to send those 50 kids to school. Many of them would not go to school if they didn't have this kind of help. And we believe that education is the way out of poverty. So we place a large emphasis on education. And this little girl wants to be a doctor. And so I was just talking to her about English classes, and she's been taking English classes, but she's reached a level in Santiago in the village where they no longer offer anything above the grade that she's. So she's now going to have to travel to Antigua with her brother to continue to learn English. And we're going to be supporting her to do that. So I think that was the basis of that discussion with Angela. Of course, we had a large party on December the 10th for everybody. We had 95 people show up to the party. All the kids and all the moms and the widows, and we ordered 30 pizzas. We had a really great time, and that's where we had the altar call for salvation, and the 15 to 20 ladies came up. Of course, I can't do a slide presentation without a piñata. We had piñatas, of course, one for the small kids, one for the bigger kids, and one for the moms. There's the one for the moms, and they love the piñatas every bit as much as the moms. They're on their knees getting the candy once that piñata is pierced. It's unbelievable. Anyways, we always have a piñata or two or three. Building projects, that's public transportation. Not really, but I just took that picture when we were driving home one day, and I thought that was kind of hilarious. That's a minivan full of people and then all the people around it. And yeah, unbelievable. So there's Bob and Corey. Corey's not here today. Anyways, so that was a house that they were building back in 2020. Okay. And these are the types of houses that some of these families live in, right? They got one side that's got tin with holes in it, other side with plastic, another side with corn stalks and a dirt floor. So we build them something a little bit more habitable with a cement floor. So we built a lot of those. And there's Edgar and Bob with another house that they built with a kitchen on the side. A lot of them cook inside their homes on an open flame, and they're ingesting smoke. This is a typical bathroom. They don't put a lot of resources into decent bathrooms. There's another bathroom. So this is, we go in and provide a little bit of decency and dig a hole and put a toilet and enclose the bathroom facility with a door. We've done a lot of that. Here they are cooking on an open flame and ingesting all that smoke. And these stoves, we've done about 350 of these stoves in 15 years at about $250 a piece. Research has proven that if a young woman starts to cook at the age of 15 on one of these stoves, they will live 12 years longer than the average woman who cooks on an open flame. So $250 or 12 years is a pretty good investment in someone's life. So we've put in about 350 of those, and we're doing some more in February. And here's a cement floor that we're pouring. This is very, very typical. Plastic walls and clothing on the bed. And at night, they put the clothing on the dirt floor so they can sleep on the bed. So we go in and build bunk beds for them with mattresses. And we've built a lot of shelving units so they can put their clothes on shelves. And this is a water bottle light. All it is a 2-liter Coke bottle with water and a little bit of chlorine. And this is what you get. No electricity. So it provides 55 watts of light. And that's just water and sun reflecting through the bottle. So that was one of our teams from WCC, Wendy and Allie. I forget their names. The one on the bottom on the striped shirt went to this church. So did the guy in the back with the cap and the white shirt, Bob Crothers. Yeah. So that was back in 2006, one of the first teams I took down to Guatemala. I just wanted to show that picture. It has nothing to do with Guatemala, but people from this church came. And there's a team of youth from this church, 2013. Yeah. I think that might have been 2018. So we were climbing Mount Pacaya, an active volcano, as a day excursion. That team stayed at our mission house for a couple of nights. Bob slept under the stairs. There was no room at the inn. So he actually slept on the floor under the stairs going up to the second level. Anyways, Dal and Sandy Poskus is in there, and Teresa. I don't know if this is the same team, but anyways, you recognize a lot of people on that team. That's a West Ottawa team. Of course, you recognize Joel on the left next to his mom. That was in 2014 or 2015, one of the others. Anyways, they're standing beside coffee being dried, right? So we had to go visit some coffee plantations, of course. And so they came down for 10 days or so, and with Sam and Ella and Micah. Look how small Micah. And Micah is now 6 feet something. Another team from your church, Sherry Dash, Angie, Jackie, the one on the front there, the young girl, Leah, okay. And of course, Dal and Sandy. Of course, this was in 2020, Corey and Bob, that might have been 2018 or something. 2020 again? Yeah. Okay. So this is me this past November with this. This is the traditional, what they used to wear, the men. Not too many men wear that. If you go to the rural villages, you'll see that. But anyways, there was a guy there selling wares. I just thought I'd take a picture with him. So upcoming trips. So we've got two teams going in February. I'm personally leaving with Jim and my wife on January 28th. The first team comes on February the 2nd, except for Bob. He's coming on the 1st. And so we're going to be working on, during the month, on some building projects. We're going to be building a house, a kitchen, and the bathroom, and installing wood stove for a man and his son who have a piece of land but no place to live. And once we're finished building this project, then his daughters are going to come and live with him. Going to be building a kitchen in the bathroom in the village of Santo Tomas. Going to be installing wood stoves, participating in the feeding center. We always do activities with kids. We take them out for an outing. Not too sure. We already take them to swimming or to a zoo. I'm not exactly sure what we'll be doing with the kids. I'll be figuring that out this week. Food packages, we're going to be delivering them again. And ministry to the moms and the widows. And this is what I was struggling with last year when I was turning 65, gearing up to turning 65. We have decided as a board to purchase a piece of land in Santiago where we're going to be building a community center, a feeding center, a training facility where we're going to have training kids how to do woodworking, sewing, weaving, and cooking. So it's going to be a training facility. Community center is going to serve as a church. So we're just the very beginning stages of this vision. So this is our new vision going forward. I just wasn't sure whether I was the one that really wanted to handle this because it's a $400,000 project. But I heard from my board, heard from the Lord, and I am the one who will be carrying the torch to get this done. So that's a 5-year plan, a vision for Love Made Real in Guatemala in a village of Santiago. And I guess my message to you this morning is, if God has put it on your heart to travel, to go on a mission trip. There's more opportunities than you can imagine out there. And it doesn't have to be Guatemala. It could be any country in the world. It could be in your community, all right? So I just encourage you just to say yes, because, God puts those desires on your heart for a reason. It's not to sit on them, right? It's to do something with them. So I just encourage you, and thank you for listening.